Call Resources Meeting to Order. Today before us, we have two bills. The first one is House Bill 148, an act relating to preservation of agricultural land. Representative Locker is here to give us her testimony on this. She has a meeting to chair in a few minutes, so she would like to get in, make her presentation, and then leave, get to her meeting. So we'll let her get right into it.
Thank you. If I could get one bill through this legislature this year, this would be that bill. This bill is a bill that would allow the permanent dedication of valuable farmland. The dedication would be to agricultural uses. Our farmland is an irreplaceable resource, and once that land is converted to subdivisions, this important resource is lost permanently to the people of Alaska. I live in a community where this is happening, where 1,000 acres per year of prime farmland is being converted to subdivisions. The state of Alaska has in the past shown a strong urgency to support agriculture. They have opened up many large areas and spent millions and millions of dollars to develop those areas for agriculture. However, up until now, they have never spent a dime to preserve agriculture. And there are many people who would argue that agriculture has no future in the state, and that why should we encourage farmers to continue to stay in business. I'm not here to argue that agriculture can be and will be a viable industry in the state. I'm only here to ask you to protect land that has been farmed for many, many years, is now being farmed, and is in jeopardy of being subdivided. And with that, I would like to say that both my aide, Sarah, and Peg Kern, who is here to testify on behalf of this bill, probably will be able to answer all technical questions. I will tell you that in Community and Regional Affairs, we had several hearings on this bill, at least three or four. And this bill was first written in the Madanuska-Susitna Borough by people interested in agriculture. It got the approval of our Ag Committee, it got the approval of our Planning Commission, and then our Borough Assembly. It has the approval of all organized agriculture in this state. After the bill was written by these people, CNRA had these many hearings and even perfected the bill. We think it's a perfect bill. We've given you the minutes and other material for backup. I hope you'll, after this meeting, take some time to read it all, because there's a lot of effort in this bill. Thank you.
It's just while you're still here, Representative Locker, it will be our intent today to take testimony on this, go through this information, have the information so we're familiar with it, so that we can review it in more detail and take no action on the bill today, but to be able to bring it back up after we get a chance to review that pile of information that Representative Locker has provided for us.
I would like to ask the chairman if he would advise us as early as possible of when it's scheduled, and that the schedule be as early as possible. We could have had teleconference and 100 farmers ready to talk to you, but we didn't think it was necessary. We've already done that work. Thank you.
Thank you. Peg, you want to come forward and with your testimony? And
my name is Peg Kerr, and I'm just here at representing myself. I've done some work on agriculture in the past, but I'm not an expert. I watched the committee work on this bill, and they did work quite a bit on it. They refined it, and I would agree with Representative Locker. It's a very well thought out bill. I hope I can answer any questions about the language if you have it. I think this is important because it is kind of a turning point bill in dealing with agriculture in the state. It says, rather than spending millions of dollars to open up land where the agricultural potential is not clear, we'll spend some money. All this bill does is spend some money to figure out the interest and the cost in ag preservation on land where the agriculture potential is proven. Maybe I can answer any questions.
Representative Gall?
Thank you. I have two brief questions. It says on page 3, line 8, the soil under no less than 40% of the surface of the parcel is classified as classes 2 through 4 by the United States Soil Conservation Service. I was just wondering how much land of this type was there in the Mansu area that was in danger of subdivision at this time or in the foreseeable future? Is it? Do you have any estimates of the volumes involved here?
I guess all of it. I don't know the acres.
All of it is subject to subdivision in the near future, you think?
Not the near future.
Well, I'm trying to understand what the circumstances are that lead to the necessity for this bill, and I understand philosophically.
I think Representative Larson may have your answer there.
Thank you.
What I might say is, as a co-sponsor of this bill, I might give some brief testimony and also be able to answer some of the questions as to the need or the philosophy.
All right, why don't I defer that question for a moment then, and as a matter of fact, I'll defer the second question too. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Ewing?
Yeah, basically I've got a question in regard to liability of the state of Alaska. In essence, I notice this carries a $77,000 fiscal note for, according
to... I believe so.
Is that a pretty realistic...
if you look on the last page, what $77,000 is basically is to staff a serious research effort to find out the interest in the bill and the cost of the bill. That has not been done in the past. That's what the fiscal note is.
Follow-up question along those lines. In the liability to the state, in the sense that they'd be, in a sense, holding this agriculture land, what would be the cash outlay that the state of Alaska would have to put out for that land to hold it in a position where it would be kept for later ag development rights versus going into urban subdivisions?
It's defined as the development rights, and that would be figured on the difference between its value in ag production, if sold as agricultural land, from its market value for any other use. It's that difference which the state would pay. The way of arriving at that would either be that would be the amount asked by the owner, or I believe the figured by an impartial assessor, whichever is less.
And one more follow-up question. Then in essence, what we're looking at is the state of Alaska probably putting in a lot more than probably just the $77,000.
This has no money for a purchase, but the... it's very hard to estimate how much interest there is. There's an old study that was done by the Division of Agriculture, and I think not done adequately, and they admit there are faults in the study, where the average cost that was asked for development rights ranged from less than $1,000 to over $3,000. And that would be determined by the difference between the ag market value and the open market value. They suspect that the strongest interest will be in the study show. In fact, the strongest interest will be in the Fairbanks and area in the Natsu Borough, and there is interest there.
Representative Chabby?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of what size, Representative Locker testified that I think she said 1,000 acres a year or something to that effect was being subdivided out of farmland. I was wondering, do you have any, what size tracks are they being subdivided into? Are they small tracks, 1 acre, 5 acre, 10 acre, 20?
I'd like it now, or I could answer it later.
Well, I'd like, I got some follow-up.
Basically, it's subdivided small size lots of 40,000 square feet to say an acre and a quarter, an acre and a half. Basically, that size.
So that would mean if it was mostly that, 1,000 acre, 700-800 lots a year, would that be? I was wondering how we was going to determine the agricultural value and the development value. You know, by development value, a small tract is per acreage is a lot more valuable. Say, a 40-acre tract is less valuable than 41-acre tracts. And how are you going to establish that? Who will determine, and is it appraisals or whatever?
Maybe I should find it in here. They say the offer by the owner, the owner would determine the development rights cost, or an assessment, whichever is less.
Representative Larson?
Sure, for Representative Caudry, I think we would have to be clear right from the start that the value of agricultural land is approximately 10% of its value as multi-purpose use land. I think to provide you with some background on that, the Madison Borough holds agricultural land sales, and the land is sold starting at 10% of its assessed value, and that basically is the sale price. Once in a while, it's bid up a little bit higher than that, but that would be about the best determination. And of course, how would you determine what's 10% of its value? The assessors, of course, have certain rules and regulations as provided by statute that they must go by and value, and putting a value on both agriculture and multi-purpose land. Those would be the regulations that would determine.
Further questions up
front?
Yes. I, through the witness, how would, in your opinion, this would help all Alaskans and not just the valley farmers, or, you know, how is this going to benefit, since Alaska is really not an agricultural state? It kind of, if you have an opinion on that.
I think it will benefit them through the marketplace, as a lot of this land is going out of production at a time when new agriculture development is not yet putting a lot of products into the food marketplace, and when prices are going up all over the country. This land is land that's near markets. If you look, there's a whole priority section that says there will be priority districts determined. One of the criteria is that it be land near markets. I think it will increase amount of food products within the state, or will not increase it directly, but keep it at the same level rather than letting it decline. And food prices are a serious problem here.
Further answer,
Mr. Chairman, if I'm going to follow through, I'm agreeing. And I'm also going to add, I think the philosophy of the legislature should be to try to provide the infrastructure or the business that would be necessary to help sustain the state after the oil revenues are gone. Now, as we talk to the Japanese, the Taiwanese, the Koreans, and others, they say by the late 1980s, early 1990s, they are going to have substantial demands for agricultural products, as well as Alaskan coal and other resources. I, myself, look upon this then as an opportunity to preserve the agricultural land that will be necessary to employ the people to provide the needs then of the Pacific Rim at that period of time. And if we don't address the needs at this time, we're not going to have the land to address it when it would be most important to Alaska, and that is when our oil revenues start to decline. So it isn't something for today, it's something for tomorrow.
So one follow-up.
Okay.
I was wondering if someone could answer me, is all the agricultural land that is agricultural land, has it been utilized present? Is there surplus? How can you keep, you know, owning property and not having a generation of income on it? It's quite a burdensome sometimes, raw land. How can, if you have a percentage of how much land is agricultural land now that's available that's not being used as agricultural land? I suppose that's my question.
In the bill it says that land that was not currently being used for agriculture would not be considered for this program. You couldn't have land that was potential agricultural land, but you hadn't farmed it, and no one had farmed it for years. You would not be considered for this program.
This kind of reminds me of my town. We had a mayor who started last year buying houses back. I'm not, don't want to be negative to the program. I just want to find out really where the state maybe is going to get the money, and if it's going to really benefit all of Alaska.
Thank you. I think at this point, this is a real good interchange here, and we're talking about a lot of policy questions, I think, here that we need to look at before we even go into all the details of the bill. But what I understand it really is, and I'm going to ask this question very directly to you, is really it is sort of a subsidization of agricultural land in one sense of the word. Is that correct? In the sense that the state of Alaska is going to be holding this land, and let's say that that land was to go into other types of uses, and may it be fourplexes or single-family residences or urban, and as, let's say, the Palmer area would increase in size, you would be holding back the land use on existing agriculture land around, which would create maybe more high-rise type of operations within. So you would be, in a sense, curtailing development and compacting it into a smaller area, actually urbanization. Am I correct? Am I on the right track?
That might be the effect. I don't think the amount of land we're talking about is that great. It's going to cause Anchorage to become high-rises. I would also say that when subdivision development happens, the state also subsidizes that. You aren't going to put new sewers down the roads of this land. You know, their infrastructure exists there. The state is not going to be asked to support
Larson, do you want to respond to that too?
I'm agreeing to Representative Muley the same, and I'm also going to add to it that this is good. You can concentrate the people in a small area, then you can provide better services at a much cheaper cost for them, and at the same time then preserve the open spaces, agricultural land, and so forth that would be necessary in order to sustain that.
And I guess if I can just interchange here, I think this is real interesting. If you hold the land, let's say the state of Alaska is boosting the value of the property up so that the development isn't going to encroach on it and take it away for urban galloping, taking it up for urban uses, that means that you're artificially holding the value into some future date that agriculture production is going to be more productive. Am I correct?
Well, yes, but remember, the state of Alaska will not be holding this land. The state of Alaska will only be purchasing the development rights. That the original owner will continue to own the land, live on the land, and use it then in its traditional use, farming.
So that is a sort of a subsidization.
If I may, let me tell you how we kind of got into this in the whole valley, if you'll excuse me, because I think it's important. Matanuskas is sitting in the valleys where Homestead is way back in 1912, and I'm quoting out of a book that I read called The Mat Valley Memoirs, and probably the best expert on agriculture in the Matanuska Susitna Borough is with us today, Mr. Hugh Johnson, in the audience. In 1935, then, is when the colonists came, and I went through a long period of time in the borough in which I was mayor of the Matanuska Susitna Borough. And it seemed like very few meetings ever went by in which someone didn't appear expressing a concern about galloping urbanization, I think you could say, onto what was formerly agricultural land. I think most of you people here today are correct in that much of the land in the Matanuska Susitna valleys, which have potential farm values, are not being farmed. That's the economics of the issues today. And I think one of the things that convinced me that this bill is not only a useful bill, but a necessary bill at this time, was that one day, the person who owned the farm made this kind of testimony. He looked around the assembly table and looked at myself and other members of the assembly, and he said, look, you work for the state, you have a retirement program, you work for the school district, you have a retirement program, you work for this, you have a retirement program. But the only retirement program that the poor farmer has is that when he's ready to retire, he must subdivide his land in order to have enough money then to live out his retirement years. So in other words, at least in my opinion at that time, the only incentive we had was to encourage farmers to take their land out of production and to subdivide so that they would have a retirement program like the rest of us. And I started to get concerned. Maybe this wasn't the best use of our land. Maybe there was some other alternative that we should provide for the farmers. We even looked upon zoning, and that's a dirty word in the Matsu Borough, as it is in many other areas. And then we thought, well, what would be a program that would probably benefit not only the people in the Matsu Borough, but also those in Fairbanks, Delta, Kenai, and other areas? And it would be an opportunity such as this. Remember, the person doesn't have to offer their land for sale to the state. This bill says the state doesn't have to buy even if it is offered. But it provides a mechanism that if it is proven to be the best interest of the public, that here is a vehicle by which then that best interest could be carried out. So basically, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of the philosophy of this bill and where it came from. It has some technicalities that have to be addressed, and I'll be the first to admit that they probably have to be changed. But it's a concept or a philosophy that I think the state has reached the point where they have to consider.
Is there anyone else who could testify on this today? Why don't we go ahead and take some of the testimony, and then we can, the committee, with the information we've got here, can come back and do some research, and we can get into the detail of it at a later date. I think Representative Barson is right with the philosophy, if we can get the basic theory.
I just have some very brief comments. My name is Jay Nelson. I'm executive director of the Alaska Environmental Lobby. If you'll look in your packets, I think there's a letter of endorsement there that we sent to Representative Locker in February, soon after the bill was introduced. The environmental community is interested in this bill from the aspect of conservation of agricultural land. It seems to be agriculture is a great interest in this state, and we're putting a lot of money into developing new agricultural land at the same time that we're developing or suburbanizing other agricultural lands. And it seems to make sense to preserve the land we already have, in addition to opening up new areas for agriculture. If I might address Representative Cowdery's question about what it was going to benefit Alaskans, the fact is that we're paying more for oranges today because Orange County is houses. And in the same sense, I think in the future that we're going to be paying more for products from Alaska because if the Matsu goes and ends up as a ranch-style home, I think it's important to protect the land now when we have a chance.
Did you suggest that we grow oranges? Is that what you said?
Well, they might be able to. No.
How do you think that we could stop any abuse of this program as far as the subsidy? How would you address that to stop the abuse of the privilege of the subsidy or whatever?
What sort of abuse?
Of qualifying for under this and not needed. How would you police the situation where the qualifications, I suppose, to qualify for this program?
Well, someone has to apply to be able to go into the program. The state has to make the judgment that it's worth buying up the development rights on that land. I think that in itself is enough of a protection. I mean, if the state, the agricultural people in the state determine the certain parcel of land, there's a whole series of priorities in there. It's close to urbanization or maybe subdivided soon. Is significant enough quality of soils and has been used previously for agricultural land, and there's a whole other series, that to think that it's worth putting the money into the program to buy it, then I think that's sufficient. What this does is set up a mechanism whereby the state could purchase the land. It doesn't allocate any money. And if in 2 years the legislature says, well, it is more of a problem, they could put $1 million or $2 million in. If in 10 years or 3 years they say it's not much of a problem, they could put nothing in. It's up to the future legislators to make the determination as to how much it's worth to them to put into the program to buy up land. And I think it's very flexible in that sense. It could be allocated on a yearly basis or on a 5-yearly basis or however.
Thank you. Something else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nelson, do you consider Alaska to be an agriculture state?
No, not primarily. However, I worry about the day when we're out of oil, oil prices go back up, or supply lines between us and the lower 48 are cut somehow. It's worrisome to me, not so much in Southeast where people are close to resources, readily accessible resources, but people in Anchorage and the interior. Our food supplies come from thousands of miles away, and I think it's important that we nurture the resources that we have in agriculture, and I think that's why this bill is important.
Do you think we're all going to be eating cabbages and barley, or what else we raise up here? I just want some answers.
The products that are raised here are fairly limited at this point, I'll admit that, but I think that there are real opportunities for horticulturists to get involved in developing northern varieties of all types of vegetables. The success of some of the programs in the villages, you know, up on the northern reaches of the country, some of the bush villages have been pretty phenomenal when they put their mind to growing vegetables. Now I think there's a real opportunity for that type of agriculture as well as other types.
Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nelson, I'd be the first guy not to try to discourage anybody from any kind of endeavor, much less farming, if he so chose to farm. But I'm a little bit like Representative Liskin. If we had every acre of classified agricultural land in this state at work in that endeavor, do you think it could feed Anchorage a month?
If every state had classified agricultural land,
yeah,
it could probably feed half the Northern Hemisphere. Actually, agricultural land in the state has got more than any other state in the union.
Given that statement, you're certainly familiar with the program outside this year. I think the Secretary of Agriculture's got a brand new program going on outside right now to back off another 50% of the available farmland for production.
Right.
Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true. If I may continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's true, but I still think that you need to separate, and this bill does separate Alaska's situation from the situation down south. We produce some of our own, in the fall you can see we produce some of our own vegetables and so forth up here, but I think that we should encourage that. I think this bill does that. If we proceed to develop, suburbanize our agricultural lands 20 and 30 and 40 miles in advance of the cities, it just makes it makes our supply lines even worse. There's no point in opening up land for agricultural development and then proceeding to build houses on at a later date. I don't see if that's an advantage to the state. Most of the state lands that are disposed of now are under agricultural disposal only. They don't sell development rights. And what this would do would retroactively apply to lands that were already in agriculture. And if they're producing now, I don't see that has any bearing on the fact that there may be an oversupply worldwide. If they're producing now successfully, I think that we should encourage them to continue. It's not, no.
Representative Larson.
In answer to Representative Liska's statement, as Alaskan agricultural state, I don't think anyone would argue that the answer today is no. I think we could go to a point in history and say, well, was Wisconsin an agricultural state? And the answer, back in history, the answer is no there too. That it's never going to be an agricultural state until it's economically viable, until the economics are such that it will be a demand. But as I mentioned, that demand, at least in my opinion, is not too far away. And if we don't start taking steps today, and this bill is just providing a toolbox, it's not appropriating any money, just a means in which it can be done in the future, I think we're going to be looking back 10 years from now saying, why didn't we do something back in 1983 when we had a chance?
Representative Gall.
I'd like to just make a couple of comments, because the questions that were asked do suggest that there's a problem with the future of agriculture in this state theoretically rather than economically, and I don't think that's the case. I think theoretically we can produce food for the people of the state. I grow.
Is this a question for the witness?
No, this is a comment.
Let's get through see if we can get through our testimony first, is what I was hoping to do today.
I have no questions of this witness. I would have a question of Representative Larson at the appropriate time.
Okay. Representative, you want to get a question?
No, I'll defer. I know we have to get along here with the other issues.
Okay. No more questions. Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sharon, are you going to make any statement at this time from the department, or?
Only if I can answer any questions, Mr. Chairman. I have no prepared testimony.
Okay, we will have this up again if you.
I just would like to know whether there's currently a department position on the bill.
Mr.
Sharon.
Chairman, the department's position on the bill is that. We support the concept and have historically supported the concept, but we have substantial problems with the bill and with fiscal impacts, specifically the bill under the current budget.
Maybe I would just a brief second question then, if I might. On the last page of the bill, it discusses a report that would be prepared by the department assessing, among other things, an estimate of the extent of the program and the necessity for the program. Do you think that part of the bill is something that you support at this time, and it's the implementation of the program that troubles you, or would that be included in the areas that you feel need further discussion?
Right. Study would certainly be needed. We have done some work in these, along these lines, as has the university, but as was pointed out earlier, the information isn't current. However, if we were put in a position of allocating someone to do this study next year as opposed to allocating a position to do something else, in our priorities, this one might fall out.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's no other witnesses on this bill at this time. I'd like to proceed on the next bill. We've got a good pack of information, and as we go along with this, we will have it scheduled again. But we can, committee members can stop and contact Donna and pick up some of the information to review it and become more familiar with it. The second bill we have up is HB 267, an act relating to herring stripping. By Representative Fuller. Representative Fuller isn't in town today. However, Representative Herman will give us the initial testimony on this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Adeline Herman. I represent District 26. I'm here to testify for House Bill 226, which passed out of the Special Committee on Fisheries on March 25th. The bill simply extends the time that herring stripping is allowed to take place in the Bering Sea until 1986. For those of you who may not be familiar with the operation, stripping is a process by which the roe is removed from the carcasses. After the roe is stripped, the carcass is discarded. In 1979, the Board of Fisheries prohibited herring stripping. This meant that most of the herring were then lightly salted and shipped overseas, bypassing Alaskan processors and labor altogether. In 1980, legislation was passed which prohibited export of unprocessed herring from the state and allowed herring stripping in the Bering Sea through the 1982 season. This was done to encourage the development of Alaska-based processing facilities and allow processors to ease into the requirement that the whole herring be utilized. Normally, herring carcasses are reduced and turned into fish meal or fertilizer. However, there are no reduction plans along the Bering Sea coast, with the closest one being in Seward. It is uneconomical to ship the carcasses to Seward. Indeed, the most economical for the carcasses at this time is to dump them. Cooperatives in Unalakleet and Kotzebue are gearing up to process their own herring. The Unalakleet Co-op stripped herring in 1981 and estimated that $60,000 was pumped into the local economy, which is a sizable amount for that area. Allowing the stripping of herring until 1986 will give local processors time to build up a base of investment for their developing fisheries, as well as create needed jobs and economic benefits for the area. The bill does not affect other areas of the state, just the Bering Sea. Regulations regarding the disposal of carcasses are still on the books, and the Department of Fish and Game, as well as the Department of Environmental Conservation, has no problem with the bill. Carcasses are taken outside of the 3-mile limit and dumped. The Fisheries Committee held a teleconference on House Bill 267. All who testified were in favor of the bill. The co-ops are developing future plans to use the carcasses for dog food or fertilizer for agricultural projects in the area.
Any questions, Representative Herman? Thank you. Representative Bussell, would you want to address this bill also?
I will address it. Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Unless there's other witnesses here to testify on this bill.
Comment, Mr. Chairman.
Question, Representative Liskin.
Well, Representative Bussell apparently sits on the Fisheries Committee, and I'm just not disfamiliar without some data on this. What's the... How many tons of these are we talking about? Where's the fiscal note on this? I don't see anything here.
Zero fiscal note on it.
Zero?
That's right. Representative Cowdery?
I don't know if anybody is here to answer that or knows. Maybe perhaps somebody does. Does the Fish and Game or DNR have an opinion? Are they in favor of continuing this exemption? Or do they have any opinion on that?
Didn't you say they both were? Neither one of them opposing?
Yeah.
I think Fish and Game is in a neutral position. DEC, I think, is also neutral, too.
Thank you. I have a few questions, if I may. First of all, to repeat Representative Liska's question, how many tons of herring are involved in this operation?
The most that the UNFIT co-op plans to do this year is between 300 and 500 tons.
500 tons. And the net benefit to the community is only between $20,000 and $35,000 for 500 tons of herring?
Well, during the teleconference, Tim Ward, the vice mayor of UNFIT, said that he anticipated they might get the benefit might be up to $60,000 this year. The figure that's in there is what they got in 1981, the first time that they tried the operation.
And last year?
They didn't do it last year.
I see. Do you know why?
Yeah, there were some problems with the fishery and also some reorganization going on in the co-op, and they were reevaluating whether they should do it. And it's actually not very economical for the co-op itself to strip herring, but they decided to continue it because it does bring in a lot of money to people around the whole area.
I see. May I continue, sir? You say that this will only affect people in that area. What's the legal justification for exempting that area in the view of the sponsors?
Sure. Yeah, it's just for the bearing fee.
Nonetheless, well, why do you think that area should be exempted while other areas should not? And what efforts have been made to market the carcasses of these fish to this day?
Well, in the teleconference, they testified that they contacted the reduction plant in fact, I think there's a letter they filed from the UN State Co-op that talks about that. They tried to contact the plant in Seward to see about doing it, but it cost them something like $400 to ship the carcasses to Seward, and they would only get $200 a ton for them, so they lose money.
And is that the only effort that's been made to market the fish?
That's the only place to do.
Representative Ewing?
Yeah, there was some kind of comment I heard sort of off the cuff here that stated that the foreign processors that come in are able to dispose of the carcasses, but the local fishermen that are there are the ones that are actually dumping the carcasses, and this is would extend that and let them continue to dump. Am I right on that? No?
Yeah, the local processor would dump it.
Okay. Because it would hurt the local fishing industry if this was not extended, I understand.
Yeah, no, the other people take it, like the Japanese longliners take the carcasses back, and actually I'm not sure if they dump them on their way back or if they take them back to Japan and dispose of them.
And I guess the second question, and then I'll be satisfied. On the bill itself, on line 14, they talk about the Board of Fisheries shall adopt regulations in accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act regarding disposal of herring carcasses for each administrative area where disposal occurred. Is it necessary to have a whole set of regulations for just dumping these things?
The regulations are already in place. They adopted them a few years ago. When I talked to Fish and Game, they said, well, they left them on the books because they anticipated that someone might try to extend it, so they're already there. In fact, I believe there should be a copy of the files.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Gall, do you have a further question?
I'd still like to... I guess that's sufficient. My question about other utilization didn't have to do with that single plant and that single utilization of the fish. There are a lot of worldwide uses for herring besides throwing away the fish or grinding it up for fertilizer. And I'm asking you whether or not the people who are going to benefit from this have made any marketing effort in terms of the herring itself, not to simply contact one local or nearby plant.
The UNFIT Co-op has looked at other ways of disposing of the herring. They've been doing some work with the Alaska Native Foundation and with CEDC on the whole issue of herring. And they haven't yet found any way that's economical to do it. But what UNFIT would like to do, as was in the testimony, is eventually use the herring carcasses for the dog food or work it into the agricultural projects. There's some pretty interesting egg projects that are going on around the UNFIT Costa area. And they think they might be able to use that for some fertilizer.
I see.
So you do plan to do
And just one final question, if I may. How many people are directly affected by this operation in UNFIT? Yeah, I don't have that material. I just have the bill here.